Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Author Pamela Paul says that America has now been thoroughly pornified. Her book on pornography as big business in America really demonstrates something of how it is shaping our entire culture. She's got some new information in here that I think will really interest you. It's going to lead to an interesting conversation today on the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number 877-893-8255. 877-893-TALK. And the particular angle we're going to take up today is this. What are you willing to do about it? What are you willing to do about it in your home, in your community, in your library, in your church? Let's not just talk about it. Let's talk about doing something about it. First, a review of issues in the news. Folks, just in the last couple of weeks, I've been looking at this NARAL ad against judicial nominee, Supreme Court nominee John Roberts. You'll remember that in this National Abortion Rights Action League, NARAL Pro-Choice America ad, they really slandered John Roberts by trying to associate him by character assassination with those who've done clinic bombing and all the rest. Now, here was one of the important things we talked about. There were some people on the other side who roundly criticized NARAL for these outrageous claims and comments. Walter Dellinger, one of the leading legal lights on the liberal side, the man who had been acting U.S. Solicitor General under President Bill Clinton, came down and said, look, I'm pro-choice, but this is an embarrassment to all pro-choice people. The Washington Post editorialized against it, even though the Washington Post is avidly in support of abortion rights. Now, I drew attention then to the fact that at least this demonstrated some intellectual integrity on the part of Mr. Dellinger and the Washington Post. Because one of the crucial issues for our personal integrity, our intellectual integrity, and our public integrity is the willingness to say when our allies are wrong. The willingness to say that's out of line. And now the burden's on me this afternoon. And I want to tell you that Pat Robertson's comments about the assassination or the would-be assassination of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez are just wrong. They're out of line. They are dangerous. They are embarrassing. And you need to hear them for yourself. This from the 700 Club, Pat Robertson.
Well, I don't know about this doctrine of assassination, but if he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think we really ought to go ahead and do it. It's a whole lot cheaper than starting a war.
Well, that's an interesting worldview right there. It's a whole lot cheaper than starting a war. The response to this has been exactly what you might expect. Political analysts say that Hugo Chavez, who is by any definition a genuinely bad guy, this is one of Fidel Castro's good friends. He is a communist. He has led Venezuela in a direction that is directly opposite both to American interests and, I believe, to the interests of the Venezuelan people. There's no doubt this is a bad leader. This is an evil man. But do we just talk about assassinating anyone we don't like? And not only this, if it were said by a merely political figure, that would be one thing for us to handle. But this is said by someone who leads an organization called CBN, the C standing for Christian Broadcasting Network. Now, there's no doubt that Mr. Robertson's done a lot of good, and I'm thankful for every person reached for the gospel by the means of his television program and ministries. He has founded an outstanding school in so many ways at Regent University that's doing some important work, especially through its law school that I'm familiar with. But this kind of statement about assassinating foreign leaders, number one, it puts our own leadership, our own national leadership, the President of the United States, in a very awkward position. It's something that publicly is used against the interests of the United States, and it deals with an act of violence by which United States forces would presumably assassinate a foreign leader. By the way, that is against established U.S. law passed by Congress, signed by the president. You know, I think this is just one of those situations in which we as Christians need to say to a man who is our brother, this was wrong. This should not have been said. Here's your opportunity to clarify. Now, give us each enough time, we will say something stupid. We will say something wrong and reckless and something that we will have to apologize for. Let's just do it. And this is an invitation to Mr. Robertson to do that. And the Christians in America should simply say, look, we understand that we're all capable of saying really, really stupid things. The smart thing is to own up to it. And I hope that's what happens. But in the meantime, our integrity is found in being honest about what this represents. The easiest thing would be to ignore this and just act like it didn't happen. But I don't think that would be the right thing to do. Well, there are so many other issues in the news as well. The New York Times is still on its campaign on the issue of intelligent design. Two articles today, one a news article analysis piece, and the other an op-ed commentary. Let me just mention, in the news report, the article's entitled Scientists Speak Up on Mix of God and Science. The reporter Cornelia Dean says this, reaction, she talks about a panel that was held at the City University of New York. The panel included only Nobel laureates in science, and recently a student asked the panel, can you be a good scientist and believe in God? I'm reading from her news report here. She said reaction from one of the panelists, all Nobel laureates, was quick and sharp. No, declared Herbert A. Hauptmann, who shared the chemistry prize in 1985 for his work on the structure of crystals. Belief in the supernatural, especially belief in God, is not only incompatible with good science, Dr. Hauptmann declared. This kind of belief is damaging to the well-being of the human race, end quote. Well, at least he didn't duck the question. What he said is that belief in God is damaging to the entire human race. At least we know where that particular scientist stands in case we need any other evidence about the dominant Darwinist worldview and its impact. Consider this op-ed column, also in today's edition of the New York Times, this entitled, Grasping the Depth of Time as a First Step in Understanding Evolution. I'm reading from this article. It is by Verlin Klinkenborg. He said this, accepting the fact of evolution does not necessarily mean discarding a personal faith in God, but accepting intelligent design means discarding science. He goes on and on. Listen to this. He says, the essential but often well-disguised purpose of intelligent design is to preserve the myth of a separate divine creation for humans in the belief that only that can explain who we are. But there is a destructive hubris, a fearful arrogance in that myth. It sets us apart from nature except to dominate it. It misses both the grace and the moral depth of knowing that humans have only the same stake, the same right in the earth as every other creature that has ever lived here. There is a righteousness, a responsibility in the deep ancestral origins we share with all of life. Well, piffle. Nonsense. There you have the two worldviews set in diametrical opposition. The Christian worldview unavoidably, irreducibly, clearly says that human beings are special creations of God. That is non-negotiable, period. Not only that, but the biblical worldview says that human beings are distinct from the rest of creation. We alone are made in the image of God, and we are told that the whole purpose of creation was for the drama of redemption whereby God saved sinners through the act of his Son. That, we now understand, is absolutely incompatible with the scientific view of the universe as held by Verlin Klinkenborg, writing in today's edition of the New York Times. Of course, the big question is whether or not it is his view, writing as an editorial observer for the Times, that really represents where science is going. Let's just recall this. The dominant model of definition, the dominant model of Darwinism and its definition in the world today is exactly what Mr. Klinkenborg is reflecting here. Now, those who claim that there's some way to reconcile evolution and Christianity, well, I believe they misunderstand at least one of those two. The dominant Darwinist theory, the one that is most prevalent in the academy today, the one that's ensconced in the textbooks and taught in the classrooms, holds that if there was a God, there's no way that he had anything to do with the creation of the actual beings and species that we have on the earth today. That's the clear point of absolute opposition between the evolutionary worldview and the Christian worldview. Brent Bozell of the Media Research Center is reporting on the recent Teen Choice Awards featured on the Fox Channel. The winners were chosen by teenagers via a poll organized by Teen People magazine. Bozell says, in between the incessant screaming of 13-year-old girls for every winner, presenter, and commercial break, came the award winners, and if this isn't enough to send shivers down the spine of any parent, nothing will. In his article published at townhall.com, he gives specific content as to those artists, television programs, musicians chosen by America's teenagers as their choice. It is an absolutely corruptible and perverse lot. Bozell sums it up by saying this is child pornography in reverse. Rather than raunchy imagery of innocent children being peddled to seedy adults, it is moral depravity being marketed to children by adults. Once upon a time, Hollywood had the common decency to build safe harbors around impressionable children. Today, the ground rules are reversed, and now it is that very sweet innocence that they are out to destroy. That's what we're talking about today with the crisis in pornified America from coast to coast. This is the Albert Mohler Program. Well, pornography is really all around us. Most of us, we frankly get so jaded by the whole picture that we fail to see the explicit pornographic images that are used in advertising, in television commercials, and billboards, what you see in the store windows at the mall, of course, not to mention what some people are wearing or not wearing. All these are pornographic images in themselves. But the business of pornography, and I'm talking here about commercialized pornography, websites, magazines, videos, and all the rest, it is truly, truly big business. Pamela Paul is a reporter. Her new book is entitled Pornified: How Pornography is Transforming Our Lives, Our Relationships, and Our Families. It's just out, published by Times Books. It's a fascinating view because, well, I don't think it's accurate to call Pamela Paul a conservative of any kind. She's writing about this out of cultural concern. My concerns are deeper than hers, but her research is really helpful for us in coming to an understanding of some of the dimensions of how pornography is indeed reaching our lives, reaching its tentacles into institutions and contexts that most of us wouldn't even be aware of. Pamela Paul's a contributor to Time magazine. Time asked her to do a story for the magazine on pornography, its impact on the culture, its big business, and all the rest. Well, that article really led her to writing this book. Her investigative work for the magazine is a combination of the sociological analysis you would expect to find, but also some very, very interesting anecdotal research. In other words, she interviewed hundreds of people. She also commissioned a major poll along with the research firm Harris Interactive about the use of pornography today. She takes her readers into the real-life world of modern pornography. In the pornified America, millions of men are like the husband described by a 38-year-old woman from the Chicago suburb. He said this, or she said about her husband. He would come home from work, slide food around his plate during dinner, play for maybe half an hour with the kids, and then go into his home office, shut the door, and surf internet porn for hours. I knew, and he knew that I knew. She goes on to say that the users of pornography are no longer just teenagers and fraternity boys and those written off as dirty old men. Now the users of virtually unrestricted porn include children, young teenagers, and adults of all ages and both genders. Even though most of the viewers of pornography are male, there's an increasing market for female-oriented pornography. The victims include not only those whose lives, marriages, relationships, careers, and sexuality are corrupted, but also everyone involved in the vast pornography industry at every stage. Now, what's really interesting about her book, she looks at the impact on both men and women, the impact on marriage. Again, she's not looking at this from anything like an explicitly Christian perspective. She's looking at this as an investigative reporter. By any measure, this is a big story. Pornography is big business. Some estimate it may be the seventh largest industry in America. You're talking about thousands of pornographic videos released every single year, as many as 11,000 different pornographic videos. That's simply huge. You're looking at an almost countless number of internet sites, and you're looking at these internet sites offering the most incredibly perverse array of pornography that could be conceived by the human imagination. You know, humanity has played around with pornography, I assume, ever since the beginning, ever since the fall. There has been a struggle with explicit pornographic images used to corrupt sexuality rather than to bring glory to God. That's the very heart of what pornography is. And it has to have been with us ever since the fall. But, you know, the avenues, the technologies, the conduits of pornography now boggle the mind far beyond what any previous generation could have imagined. The Internet itself has become the prime way that most young children and teenagers are introduced to pornography. And the reality is that most teenage boys now have extensive contact with pornography one way or another. Pamela Paul understands that this is a new development. She says pornography is wildly popular with teenage boys in a way that makes yesteryear's sneaked glimpses at Penthouse seem monastic. For teenagers, pornography is just another online activity. There is little barrier to entry and almost no sense of taboo. Instead, pornography has become a natural, right, and accepted pastime. She talks about college dorm rooms in which there are sticky notes on the door that say, post-it notes that say, "Leave me alone, I'm watching porn." Let me tell you, the one thing in this book that perhaps shocked me more than anything else was the revelation that a lot of kids, teenagers, are getting their access to porn in libraries. Now, that's why I think parents may find this particular show very interesting. You may have all the right protections on your children at home. You may have the filters and the blockers on the software. You have full accountability. The computer can be sitting in the middle of the kitchen. That's good. That's very important. You may think that you're protecting your children, but do you know that in many, if not most, public libraries, there is unrestricted access to pornography? Pamela Paul gives the statistics in her book. She gives also some interesting anecdotes. A librarian in the Northwest who said, "Look, I didn't think my business was going to be as a purveyor of pornography to teenage boys, but that's what's happened." She talks about the fact these kids come in, they ask for the access to pornography, and if they're 14 or older, the law says they have to give them the access. Well, we are living in one of those times in which we had better know what's out there. Pamela Paul's book, Pornified, How Pornography is Transforming Our Lives, Our Relationships, and Our Families, is one way of finding out what's out there. I wrote an extended commentary about the book that was published on Monday at my website, www.albertmoeller.com. I want to suggest that you read the commentary. You'll have to make up your own mind about whether or not to read the book. My warning about the book is this. It includes sexually explicit material drawn from the very reports that she has investigated. There's a sense in which, just like having a trial on pornography requires you to document things in a most grotesque way, if you're going to do a sociological or cultural analysis about porn, unfortunately, even to describe what you're talking about is to involve yourself in sexually explicit language. Much of it's simply sickening. But you won't find that in the commentary. Again, that's at Albert Moeller, MOHLER.com. Go back to previous commentaries for Monday. It's just one day back. But right now, the urgency is your conversation about this. I'd love to talk to you and hear from you about what you are willing to do about this. How has pornography impacted your life, the life of your family, perhaps your marriage or your children? If you're a parent, what are you doing to protect your kids? How many of you are really aware that the libraries have become a major vehicle for distributing pornography to kids? The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. It's one thing to know about it. It's another thing to be ready to do something about it. In the course of the program today, I'm going to offer some concrete suggestions. We've talked about this several times in the past, but I can tell you of the hundreds and hundreds of emails I receive every week, you'd be shocked to know how many deal particularly with this issue. Just recently, hearing from someone whose marriage has been horribly affected by pornography, listening to parents talk about and ask about what to do with their kids who are involved in pornography. How in the world can you protect your kids in a world like this? What are you willing to do? Are you willing just to say now you can't even go into the public library or you have to be in the library supervised? It's a dangerous world out there. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-8255. Talk. Pamela Paul's book is very interesting. It gives us a window into the industry, but here's how she talks about its impact on the culture. She says today pornography is so seamlessly integrated into popular culture that embarrassment or surreptitiousness is no longer part of the equation. It's like the culture is saying, look, it's simply there. People want it. People are going to use it. Get out of the way and just deal with it. I just don't think that's acceptable. Not for us. Not for my kids. How about you? The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The issue is pornified America, its impact, your home, your church, your school, your community. This is your turn to talk. I'm Albert Mohler.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Well, let me tell you, if your teenage son and his friends have been hanging out at a local public library, it may not be the books that have attracted them, because what we're finding out is that the libraries, both in schools and especially public libraries, have become conduits for getting pornography right to kids. And, you know, groups like the American Library Association and others have been fighting the kinds of laws that would allow the limitations on that. And, of course, you know what they're crying, censorship, censorship, censorship. Well, you know what? That's a part of a parent's job, and I would think that parents ought to be able to count on a public library not making, pornography available to teenagers and to children. And by the way, if the teenager's looking at it, others are going to see it too. Younger children walking by. I mean, it's not like this is something taking place in, out of the public view. This is the corruption of American culture, even through the public library. It's supposed to be a repository of wisdom and learning, and instead, it's learning, all right, just not the kind of learning we as parents would expect in the public libraries. Let's go to Tosi calling from Puyallup, Washington, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Tosi, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Albert. I just have to say that our family has had to make many changes to protect our two young girls. We no longer patronize 7-Eleven because of the pornographic visuals that are at eye level for kids. We don't watch any television because of all the images that they're just bombarded with. We used to rent from Blockbuster, but, Blockbuster started putting a rack up next to the children's section with all the gaming video magazines and games with half-naked women all over them and very suggestive postures, so we don't go to Blockbuster anymore. And I'm noticing it's starting to come into the grocery stores. And, frankly, I'm just wondering how far we have to go to protect our young kids, or our older kids, for that matter, in this society. It's ridiculous.
I don't know, Tosi, but I tell you what, I'm sympathetic. Maybe you need to look in the classified ads for abandoned Pacific Islands. I mean, I don't know. I'm not making light of it. I think what you're talking about is exactly it. The grocery stores, for instance. My father was a manager of a grocery store. I kind of grew up in a grocery store. Well, these days you go in and you see what is on the covers of the magazines, and it's not the grocery store that I knew from times past. You know, one of the big growth sectors of the publishing industry is what are known as the laddie magazines. That's a British term referring to young men. You have magazines like FM and FYM and Maxim and Details and others like that that are just softcore pornography. And I mean, as if softcore even has any meaning anymore. It's just explicit pornography. It may not be legally defined in terms of how minimal the clothing may be, but these are very suggestive gestures and all the rest. Tosi, let me ask you a question. How old are your children?
They place those right at the cash register where you're forced to wait in line to check out, and your children have nothing to do but peruse those magazines.
Yeah, Tosi, I don't think you heard me. That's a very important point. But how old are your children?
They're 5 and 6.
Okay. So even right now, at those young, tender ages, Tosi's concerned with protecting her kids from seeing all this. And I think that's very important because, you know what? The 5- and 6-year-old are right there in the checkout line. And for that matter, the 5- and 6-year-old could be in the public library where some older teenagers are pulling down explicit pornographic images, and they could just be walking by. And, there's an education that we don't want our kids to have. Tosi, thank you so much for your call from Puyallup, Washington. Let's go to Nick calling from Idaho Falls, Iowa, also listening on XM. Nick, welcome.
Good afternoon, Dr. Mohler. I just kind of wanted to give a statement here about what our pornography has affected my life. It's basically destroyed a marriage. It's alienated my children from me. I consider myself at this point a recovering porn addict, but it's one of those things that it's a daily fight, for me to kind of keep away from it, and I've got a Christian accountability partner who, helps me out and stuff like that. But it's so difficult to walk away from it because of the imagery just sticks with you.
You know, Nick, I really appreciate your call, and I genuinely appreciate your honesty. That's the kind of testimony we need to hear. Now, I want to ask you a question and just test a theory with you. You know, my guess is that the Internet has made getting away from pornography all that more difficult. Is that true?
Absolutely. That's completely true.
Yeah, that's what you find in the research reports. That's what is very clear in Pamela Paul's new book, Pornified. And that's what I know from the anecdotal experience and ministry experience that I've had with young people and older ones, for that matter, who've gotten involved in pornography. The Internet simply brings this superhighway of information right to your door, right to wherever the screen is sitting in front of you. And, you know, if kids have the opportunity to go and satisfy their curiosity, they're going to go there. That's just human nature. We need to understand that our kids are sinners, as are we. That's why we as parents are there to put the boundaries, the walls of protection around them to make sure this doesn't happen. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We're talking about the porn crisis and what you're willing to do about it on the Albert Mueller Program. Well, you know, most people are familiar with the fact that pornography has been available in magazines, in what were used to be called, trade paperbacks, the trash books, also in film and video form. It used to be in the adult theaters, and now, of course, it's mainstreamed. It is sold as a major commercial product. You know, another way that pornography is distributed in terms of hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue is through hotel rooms and pay-per-view pornographic services, and, of course, the Internet. And the Internet's just huge because it's almost virtually out of control. It's just where you can't be sure what's coming across the digitalized universe. And if you've got kids, you just have to know it is a dangerous world out there. I want to know, we may be missing something. You know, on the whole score of pornography, you know, are there other means whereby pornography is really reaching its tentacles into our society? You and your family may have encountered a particular problem we need to know about. Give us a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We're going to go to Rick calling from West Des Moines, Iowa, listening on KFFF. Rick, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Dr. Mueller. I just want to make the point that I'm a youth leader at our local church here in West Des Moines. And I know since high school, when I was younger, I dealt with pornography quite a bit, and I know how, you know, the negative aspects of it are tremendous. And I think what's important is that we need to engage our youth, especially youth ministry, because that's where it starts off, and that's where where it's shaped. It's from, like, when you're young, and then it just grows, and it won't stop until we battle it when we're really young. And I know from this weekend, traveling to Chicago with our youth group, I had the chance to engage with our youth about it, and, you know, they're very open about talking about it, and I think that's one of the best ways to battle it, is just to, you know, not worry about, you know, hurting someone's feelings, or, you know, not worrying about, you know, what being embarrassed or anything, but just actually engaging it for what it is, you know, and letting the Holy Spirit lead and just pointing out, you know, how evil it is and how it can, you know, change someone's life. And I think that's what the church needs to do.
Yeah, Rick, hanging with me here for a minute. You know, we've talked about this issue a lot on this program, and as we've talked about it, we've looked at the fact that the pornography really corrupts the entire sexual system. It corrupts relationships. It corrupts expectations about marriage. It corrupts trust within a relationship. It really leads to all kinds of really, really tragic results in individual lives. But Rick, you were talking about being on this trip with teenagers. Just how big a problem is it? I mean, just from your experience, are there a lot of kids involved in this?
There are a ton. I think more than what the church really realizes or is willing to admit, because I can tell you, you know, even when I was involved in it, it gets worse. That's why we have sexual pedophiles, because when you get on one thing, it's not enough. You search the internet for hours until you get something else that gratifies you, and it keeps on moving up to the point where it's, you know, you just get, your heart gets hard and nothing satisfies you, and then that ruins your relationship with a normal woman, you know, and to be pure. But I think, you know, talking with the kids, it's, you know, it's a problem with them a lot. I mean, a high majority of the teenagers, I know for a fact.
Rick, I think that's a very honest and accurate assessment. I really appreciate your call. And while you talk about the appetitive nature of this is certainly true, there's kind of like an escalating level that is required so that people who got their gratification at one level of pornography are then not satisfied. They keep going deeper and deeper and deeper into it. And that's what's fueling this entire industry. And that's what's corrupting so many lives. I mean, just think about how many teenagers there are out there who have seen things and now know things and imagine things and maybe even expect things that are just so far outside any biblical understanding of sexuality. It makes it very difficult for them to even understand what God was up to in the gift of sex and therefore in the gift of marriage. Let's go to Jackie calling from Louisville, Kentucky on WFIA. Jackie, welcome. Jackie, you there? Yes,
yeah.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, I was, you know, just as far as the internet goes, one time I was helping my child with homework, and they had to know how many feet were in a mile. And when you type in things like that, we had at least 10 pop-ups for pornography, just pop-ups. And, you know, you've got your child sitting there, and you're trying to get them away from the computer just for doing homework.
Yeah, Jackie, you know, that's one of those reasons you may actually want to look at a good pop-up blocker or something like that. And I'm not a software specialist here to recommend what kind of products. But, you know, the best of them won't catch everything. But, you know, just the search engines, you have to be very careful what you put in, not only in terms of the search listings that come up in terms of the result of the search, but also the kind of ads. Because if you look at the right side often of these search engines, they're filled with advertisements, and some of it can be pretty bad stuff. I appreciate that word, Jackie. That's something good for us to remember. Vinny calling from Cleveland, Ohio, listening on WHKW. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Doctor. I think one of the aspects that you're missing in this discussion, you're considering pornography just as pictures and video, but a devastating one that I've seen both in my personal life and with some other people is like pornographic chat rooms.
Yeah.
I kind of got involved with those in my early years in college, and it's been a struggle ever since. And I've been saved in the Lord the last couple of years and got a good wife at home that understands, but it's affected my job, it's affected my relationship, and got into it innocently enough in college thinking it was a nice alternative to dating, trying to keep myself pure for marriage and whatnot, but it's been had devastating effects on me and some of my friends. And
yeah. Vinny, another very honest call that's helpful to us, and you're exactly right. The online chat rooms are filled with explicit sexuality. And, you know, earlier this week, I talked about this phenomenon of virtual adultery. It was reported by the Sydney Morning Herald. And in the top segment, it may have been even yesterday, I talked about this because it has become a very big marriage killer. And, Vinny, you're exactly right. That's something else we need on the agenda today. It's not just the websites offering video or images. These chat rooms offer an opportunity for the kind of anonymous exchange of sexual messages that really can pervert the soul, can destroy marriages, and destroy lives. Thanks for that call, Vinny. We're going to go to Cindy, also calling from Cleveland. It'll be HKW. Cindy, go right ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to make the point real quick. We've got a 16-year-old daughter and a 12-year-old daughter, and we want to teach them how to cope with these things. We understand that this stuff comes oozing in from every direction, from the schools, from the public, from the TVs. We don't even, it's like water leaking in everywhere. So what we want to do is we look ahead to what sort of adults do we want them to be. We want them to understand the world. They have to function in the world. But they have to understand that there's very bad things out there. And so we're very, very open with the girls. We discuss things. We do review the music. We do watch the shows, but we don't try to keep them in a bubble. I could liken it to you have to run the race with them. You can't fall behind. You can't get lazy about it. You have to constantly be aware and keep those lines open. And, you know, my girls are not afraid to say, Mom, look, there's an adult bookstore over there. We're not going to drive past that. So they're aware.
Well, that's good. And the conversation you're having within your family is altogether rare, Cindy, and God bless you and your husband and your daughters for having it. That's a good place to start. When we come back, I'll share some final thoughts. We're talking about pornified America. You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Pamela Paul's on to something here. The origin of her project was an investigative report for Time magazine, and it really led her into a long-term analysis and study of pornography in America. It is huge, huge business. We're talking about one of the biggest industries in America in terms of production, in terms of distribution, in terms of of the pay-per-view industry, satellite cable television, the internet, the video sales distribution. It's just simply huge. But, you know, that's just the commercial aspect of it. The explicit sale and production of pornographic images. How about the ambient porn in this culture? That's big, too. What's used in advertising, you know, you see it on television, you see it in the billboards and all the rest. You know, if you're a teenager in America today, you've seen more probably than you can remember of all of these images. And it has to have a distorting effect upon the psyche, the development of a young person. And it has a dulling effect for those of us of all ages. You know, when Cindy called, she mentioned, you know, training her kids in terms of cultural engagement. That's what we talk about on this program all the time, how we as Christians should engage the culture. But, you know, there are certain parts of the culture that we shouldn't engage. And I think that's a good opportunity for us to remind ourselves of that truth as well. And, you know, I think regardless of your age or gender, it's just not smart to go out into the internet, into the World Wide Web without protection, without boundaries, without filters and blockers, and without the kind of accountability you would need. Because the reality is that the human imagination is pretty perverse. The human imagination has an almost insatiable desire to know, well, what we shouldn't know. It is certainly true that the male psyche, in terms of male patterns of sin, tend to be bent in this way perhaps more than women, but I think it is a human condition to want to know what we shouldn't know. That may be the very, very heart of sexual perversity in and of itself, but certainly it's the heart of what drives so much interest in the internet and in pornography, and in the fact that it explains the vulnerability of young people, especially whose parents don't put together the kind of protections that are not only recommended, but just downright necessary. You know, one of the issues that came up in this program today was the caller who said, you know, you can stop looking at the porn, but the images are still there. You know, theologically, we have to hope and pray that the Holy Spirit will do that work of renewing the mind to bring healing, even from the lingering effect of those images. But it's a reminder to us that sin has its consequences, and one of the consequences of pornography is that bank of images that many people just simply can't forget. Don't forget tomorrow's Ask Anything Wednesday. Tomorrow we'll talk about what's on your agenda. Write down the phone number, 877-893-8255. Write me by email at www.albertmoeller.com, and meet me tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.